He may be fat and bald, but he knows his sports. You're listening to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Welcome to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show here on KGVM. My name is Ian Laird. You can reach us at kgvm.org, or my headphones aren't working, so that's neato, or on 95.9 FM on your radio dial, also at IanLaird3 on the Twitter. Big show coming up today, lots to talk about, but first, the Gallatin Valley Sports Show is brought to you by Spectator Sports Bar and Grill, with countless TVs and specials. Catch all the big games located in 19 Ty Lane by the MSU campus. Phone number is 587-2156. That is Spectator Sports Bar and Grill, where the tailgating continues. Once again, lots to talk about this week, including the Hawks' role in Billings. New stadium opens up in Bozeman this Friday, and the Cats run past the Spartans easily in their game this weekend. But first, we'll head to national news. Still have a, or we'll start off with college football news. Houston's coach Dana Holgorsen said Tuesday that his team is not giving up on the season despite the decision for two of his top players to redshirt the remainder of the 2019 campaign in return for 2020. Holgorsen's senior quarterback Derek King and senior receiver Keith Corbin met with reporters Tuesday to discuss King and Corbin's unusual decision to sit out the rest of the season. Following the Cougars' 1-3 start, Holgorsen said, "Anyone suggesting the team is tanking the rest of the year is misguided." I have no issue with this at all. A coach can leave whenever he wants to, and there's no repercussions and nothing that any of the players can do. Yet a player can't leave, and if he does, he has to sit out a year, and the coach makes a big deal about commitment and all this other stuff when the coaches are trying to get a bigger, better job as well. This gives some of that power, I think, and some of that back to the player where they can decide their own future. Hey, we're 1-3. I can sit out. You get four games to play, so I can sit out the rest of this year, get better, still practice with the team, do everything else. You're just a redshirt, and then come back next year with maybe an older group, which is kind of what Houston is hoping. Or they can go in the transfer portal. Both players have said, we're not going to transfer. We're going to stay here. We're just going to give it a year to develop, and maybe next year, our senior years, instead of having a lot of young players around us, we can have some older players and maybe push to do something. So I get why fans are upset, but I don't see any issue with this. And again, this comes into the new rule that started last year that you get four games. You can play in four games and then still redshirt that year. So a lot of players are thrown in there at the beginning to see if they can compete. If they can't, then it's like, okay, you need a year to mature, do whatever. I was never in sports, so I'm still not mature if you ask my wife. So that gives them that chance to do that. And I think that's great. Hell, the Cats used it last year with Jones. He was injured, came back, played in the four games, or maybe even three games. But I believe it was four games. His last one was Cat Grizz. We made it into the playoffs. He didn't play in those two playoff games. We could have used him, but he didn't play because he decided, and Cho decided, you know what, we're going to sit you so you can play all of next year. And look what he's done so far. He's always been only been explosive for two games in a row, ran for over 100 yards in the first half. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I think it's good, and I think if the player has that option and the coach is willing to accept it. Now, you have some places, like UM, where a player went in and said, hey, I've played four games after a suspension and everything else. I don't want to play in the last Cat Grizz game because that puts it at five, and I'd like to redshirt this year, use this year as a redshirt year because I missed the first six games or whatever it was, and then injuries and everything else. I want to sit this one so I can have a full year next year. And Hauk basically told him, hit the bricks. Nope. That's my choice, not yours. And so you can go somewhere else. So he basically told him to walk. And the player did. I believe it was Calhoun that did that. So, I mean, coaches handle it differently. Hauk's never going to handle it correctly, I don't think. But coaches handle it differently. This coach, again, said, kind of like Choate did last year, sure, I get what you're trying to do. We need a nucleus and a better thing. This will also give some of those backups and the backup quarterback and wide receiver a chance to play throughout the year, not a year that they were hoping they would have, but maybe they can spark something, and that gives them a year of maturity as well. So next year after they graduate, these young freshman kids can be juniors and have some playing experience and everything else. So I don't see any issue with it. But like always, somebody out there will. In another nobody-can-have-nice-things news in college football fan who was helping raise money or more than $1 million for the University of Iowa's Children's Hospital after holding up a sign on ESPN College Game Day has apologized for racist tweets sent as a teenager. Carson King, 24, released a statement Tuesday night to address the two racist tweets after being asked about them earlier in the day by the Des Moines Register. I had no recollection of it. I reread it today, 8 years later, and I see it was an attempt at humor, and it was offensive and harmful, King said. I am embarrassed and stunned to reflect on what I thought was funny when I was 16 years old. He was actually 14. I was sincerely apologized. His tweets have been deleted, but King said in his statement that he was quoting comedian Comedy Central show Tosh.0 when he did it. He's a 16-year-old kid, and he made a mistake when he was 16. Now he's 24, and somehow this comes back to haunt him. Kings held a sign during College Game Day's Iowa State on September 14th before the Cyclones game against Iowa. The sign said Bush Light Supply needs replenished and included his Venmo username. Money began pouring in and King said he would be donating the money to Spread Family and Children's Hospital of Iowa City after a number of companies agreed to contribute as well. According to King, the amount was $1.14 million as of this last Tuesday. Anheuser-Busch was one of them, Busch Light's partner company, said Tuesday that they will cut all ties with King, but will stand by the decision to donate to the Children's Hospital. So when the kid is 16, he quoted Tosh.0, and now when he's 24, he gets blasted. Good God, people. Can you not let a good story just be a good story? Why do we have to, every time something good happens, find something in that person's past that just rip them down? In this whole culture of, oh, you're getting famous, we're going to find one thing you did when you were 14 or 15 years old. My son is 13, almost 14 years old. He's a moron, and he probably says horrible, stupid things. Probably not racist things, but horribly stupid things. It happens. And it was that long ago, the guy doesn't even remember it, yet we have to then tear that down. A good story was on Scott Van Pelt. Everyone felt great about it until they dug 8 years in the past on his Twitter to find one bad thing he might have said. And this is what comes up. Racism and all that is horrible. Of course it is. When you're 16 years old and you're quoting a TV show, I don't know if that's racist or if it's just being an idiot and quoting something you shouldn't have because you thought at 16 it was funny. I thought farts were funny at 16, and I still do. But to the point, I thought a lot of things were funny. And now I don't. I don't find a lot of those things funny. I found TV shows funny back when I was 16. Now I look at them and go, my God, this is a terrible show. So it is what it is, but it just amazes me that this is what they do, is just tear this kid down and everything else when it's a good story and people just can't leave it alone. On to NFL news, Jacksonville Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey was the team's facility Wednesday morning, but he will not be practicing because of a back injury. Now today it came out he didn't practice today because his wife is expecting a baby, so he was sick Monday, he had a back injury Wednesday, and now he has a baby today. A lot of speculation that basically he's just holding out to get more money. He's making up excuses until they pay him or trade him. I don't even think he wants to get paid at this point anymore. I think he's sick of it and he just wants to get traded. I know that the Jets would easily give up that schlock Trumaine Johnson right now and trade him to the Jaguars and probably some picks for him, but I don't think anybody wants that that baggage and that contract on it either. Ramsey's worth it. He's not. He is a brash player and everything else, but he doesn't get a lot of personal fouls. He doesn't talk a lot in the media. He's pretty straightforward, and the Jaguars have done nothing as a team to help him on the offensive side. It's basically just defense. If you give up more than 10 points, we're going to lose, so it's all up to you. So I don't blame him for wanting to get out of that that situation. We'll see where that escalates to. In Detroit Lions news, they are still undefeated. Haha, after winning against Philadelphia, or against the Eagles in Philadelphia, 27-24. This week should be a bigger test as the Lions will host the Kansas City Chiefs at Ford Field Sunday. Kickoff is scheduled for 11 o'clock. So by 2, we will know if Detroit is going to be in the Super Bowl or if they're just going to be another 8-8 team that squeaks into the playoffs like they always do and lose. In PGA news, Sebastian Munoz won the Sanderson Farms with an 18-under score, defeating Sungjae Im in the playoff. Nick Taylor missed the cut. This week, the PGA travels to wine country for the Safeway Open at Silverado Resort in Napa, California. Currently, right now, the leader is, let me bring it up real quick, Adam Scott at 7-under through 16. Francesco Molinari is at 5-under in second place. A big tie at minus 4 for third, including Cameron Tringali, Bryson DeChambeau, some of the bigger names. Nick Watney is at 3-under. I don't think Phil Mickelson and some of the other ones have teed off yet, but some decent names in this tournament coming up. This weekend, Nick Taylor currently has just teed off and through one is even after shooting, or through two now is even after shooting a 4 and a 3 on 10 and 11. So we'll keep you updated as we go through on those scores as well. So we'll take a quick break right now, come back with a look at high school sports from around the valley. Tune in this Friday once again, as we will be broadcasting the Bozeman Hawks football game versus Great Falls Bison. This will also be the first game in the new, brand new, spanking, shiny Van Winkle Stadium. Old one was old Van Winkle. This is new Van Winkle. Kickoff is set for 7 o'clock. We'll be airing at about 6:50. This is the Gallatin Valley Sports Show. We'll take a quick break. You're listening on KGVM.
He may be bad at sports, but he loves talking about them. You're listening to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Welcome back to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show here on KGVM. My name is Ian Laird. You can reach us again at kgvm.org, 95.9 FM on your radio dial, or on the phone, 406-624-6534. Also on my Twitter, at IanLaird3, IanLaird/KGVM Sports. Gallatin Valley Sports Show is brought to you by Spectator Sports Bar and Grill. With countless TVs and drink specials, catch all the big games. Located 19 Ty Lane by the MSU campus, their phone number is 587-2156. That is Spectator Sports Bar and Grill, where the tailgating continues. So let's take a look at high school action from around the valley, and there were some great games that happened and great performances this last week. We'll start in Bozeman with football. In the second and third quarters, Bozeman scored 44 points. In dismantling Billings Skyview, Bozeman rolled to a 58-0 win over the Falcons to improve in 3-1 on Thursday in Billings. That was last Thursday. Hawks are now ranked number 4 in the state, which I think is a little high considering what happened at Big Sky. Maybe that was a fluke. This time, Bozeman didn't leave its opponent with any chance. Croy, who's been relied on heavily this season, scored from a yard out, easy for me to say, to put the Hawks up 14-0. 5-yard run again by Croy pushed the lead to 24-0. Logan Paythorpe then returned. Where was I here? I had to shut off the music. An interception. Paythorpe returned the interception for a touchdown. Croy scored twice more. And then Keelan Patton returned a blocked punt to the end zone. By the end of the third quarter, Bozeman led 51-0. So a beatdown over in Skyview. Sorry, Sarah Laird. I know you're a Skyview Falcon, but that was a tough one for Billings Skyview. This week, Hawks will open up in the new Van Winkle Stadium for homecoming, again against Great Falls High School. Kickoff scheduled for 7 o'clock. You can also catch the game right here on KGVM starting at 6:50. My mom says I'm really good at play-by-play, so you should listen and see what you think. Hawks football is brought to you, as always, by the Ridge Athletic Club and Spectator Sports Bar and Grill and the Liquor Spot. In boys soccer for the Hawks, Hawks' mid-game change led to 6 second-half goals and a 7-0 win last Friday over the Wrestlers in Great Falls. Will Kaiser and Jackson Coles each scored 3 goals, and Henry Robinson added a goal of his own. Zach Stoddart, Luke Price, Zach Springer, and Kaiser each assisted a score as well. Hawks scored just 9 minutes into the game on a Zach Springer penalty kick. 2 minutes later, Sam Brierley scored on a Jackson Cole assist. 11 minutes after that, Bozeman already established itself en route to a smothering 9-0 win. That was in Great Falls, or against Great Falls High, the very next day. So huge wins. There are 2 huge wins for the Hawks. First one 7-0 over CMR, and then 9-0 the next day on Saturday against the Great Falls High Bison. This week the boys take on Billings Skyview tonight. That kickoff is set for 5 o'clock. Despite a shaky start in girls soccer. Bozeman eked out a 3-2 win against Great Falls CMR on Rustler's homecoming Friday night. Even though not playing in their full potential, the Hawks, now 4-0-2, were up going into halftime off an unassisted shot near the post by senior forward Riley Asbell. The Hawks increased their lead at the beginning of the second half when junior forward Peyton Putnam scored on a shot over the head of the goalkeeper on the far post. She was assisted by Asbell on that one. It put them up by two. CMR answered with a couple goals to tie the game, but the Hawks weren't done. Senior forward Holly Luckley secured the win for Bozeman with a volley off a corner kick against Sammy Murray. Lady Hawks kickers weren't done for the week, as they then played against Great Falls the next day and won that one 2-0 on Saturday, the Bison's home turf. Junior midfielder Abby Ekstrom scored in the 30th minute off an assist from junior Kylie Jones. Senior forward Riley Asbell added a second goal, so a great week for Riley with two goals for sure. In the second for Bozeman, now 5-0-2, in their 52nd minute off an assist from senior Holly Lucky and Ekstrom. I don't get how everyone gets an assist. Shouldn't there be one assist? If you kick it to a player and then they kick it to someone and they score, that's that person's assist. Hockey does that too, where it's a goal by this but assisted by six players. No, it should just be one player. But that's just me. This week, the Hawks will follow the boys in Bozeman facing Billings Senior. Again, kickoff tabbed for 7 o'clock. In volleyball, let the rivalry begin. Bozeman, who is at 5-4 and 3-0 this year, led by 12 kills and 8 digs from JoJo Riddick, took the first round of the Eastern AA's newest rivalry, 25-18, 25-19, and 25-14. The environment featured a pair of raucous student sections as Belgrade and Bozeman played their first ever volleyball match as conference foes. Student men had been jawing at each other, says the Bozeman Daily Chronicle, over social media throughout the day and then let loose during the back and forth match. I haven't seen the South Gym that full in years. It was packed. To the one side, it was all Hawks and all red, and the other side was Belgrade, and they filled that whole thing with green. It was a great atmosphere. So if that's the kind of atmosphere we're going to get out of this rivalry, it should be a very, very good one coming forward. And it may have taken in the next game 5 sets, but Bozeman secured a win over Missoula Sentinel in Bozeman on Saturday. The Hawks lost their first set 25-19 for fighting back to take the next two sets 25-15 and 25-13. Sentinel answered with a 25-17 fourth set before Bozeman put the Spartans away with a dominating 15-6 finish. But wait, the Hawks weren't done. Bozeman completed the sweep of the week, defeating Hellgate then after they took down Sentinel 25-8, 20-25, 25-14, and 25-22. That was on Wednesday in Bozeman. So this week, the Bozeman Spikers will take on Great Falls High at 5 o'clock. That game is on Friday in Bozeman South Gym. Then we'll take on CMR on Saturday at 1 o'clock. And again, it is homecoming weekend for the Hawks, so all these are home games. Should be a great atmosphere all week for Bozeman High. Their last homecoming before the two schools split, really. Golf, both Bozeman boys and girls won team titles as the boys finished with a score of 304. Just 3 shots better than Laurel, though. Hawk girls combined for 338, beating second-place Billings West by 17. For the sixth time in 6 tournaments, both Bozeman teams came in first. Cora Rosanova shot an 82, Cooper Knarr shot an 83, and Sammy Yates shot an 85, placing the Hawks girls second, third, and tied for fourth. On the boys' side, Jordan and Justice Verge shot 73 and 75, respectively, and Ramey Lloyd shot a 76, led the Hawks to a victory, allowing them to overcome the Locomotives, placing 3 in the top 4. So Laurel, tough golf team over there, but the Bozeman Hawks still undefeated in tournaments on the season. Moving on to cross country, the boys and girls each placed 7th at a strong showing for the two squads, hoping to make noise at the regional level. On the girls' side, Natalie McCormick placed the Hawks by finishing in 18 minutes, 56.7 seconds for 31st place. Lucy McCormick took 19 minutes and 3 seconds, while Grace Gibbard and Riley Moore both needed 19 minutes and 4.1 seconds to complete the course, so just right behind them. That trio finished 36th, 37th, and 38th. Two of Bozeman's top runners faced adversity as Alex Moore with a 20 minutes and 17 seconds. Came in 110th, lost a shoe during the race, and Tara Trom became lightheaded during the race and didn't finish. So that's a bummer for those, but hopefully they will Tara will stay healthy or get back to healthy. Hopefully it's just a water issue or dehydration, and Alex Moore will just have to tie the shoes a little tighter. Griffin May led the boys' team by setting a personal record of 15 minutes, 55.5 seconds, coming in 26th. Sterling Marshall Pride finished with a time of 16 minutes, 11.14 seconds. And Alexander Danehauer, 16 minutes, 24.5 seconds, followed up in 42nd place and 61st place, respectively. This week, the Hawks will head west to the Mountain West Invite in Missoula. Moving on to Belgrade, down I-90 a little bit. Volleyball, the end result was a loss on the road Tuesday night. But overall feeling was upbeat at the Belgrade Volleyball's team, says the Belgrade News. The Panthers were competitive throughout the Eastern AA, defeating Great Falls, and then had an opportunity to take the third set, losing the match 16-25, 23-25, 23-25. The Panthers now 1-9 and 0-6 on the year. Couldn't quite get over the hump in the second set, but had a chance to tie it in the third at 24 after the team had traded the lead throughout the game. Hazel Eaton and Maddie Tomasetti combined for 14 kills to lead the Panthers, while Taisley Bowler, and Eaton each had 15 digs. This week, the Panthers Spikers will be heading to Butte tonight to take on the Butte High Bulldogs. Moving on to girls soccer, after one of his players went down with an injury, the Panthers trailed 2-1 late in the second half. Bridwell noted, "Everyone was expecting the referees to blow his whistle. He didn't happen, and Billings West managed to score an insurance goal en route to a 3-1 Eastern AA victory. So a player's down, nobody blows the whistle, and West scores." That was at Amend Field in Billings. The Panthers, 2-1-3 on the year, or 2-3-1, excuse me, on the year, have a week off before hosting defending state champ Billings Skyview. That game is scheduled for September 28th. Boys soccer, once again, a quick goal put Belgrade in on its heels Saturday afternoon, and the Panthers were unable to keep pace with Eastern AA loss to Billings West at Amend Field as well. Billings West scored in the third minute and went on to post a 4-0 victory. It was the fourth straight shutout defeat for the Panthers, who are still seeking its first victory as a AA program. Boys are off next week as well. So Belgrade's struggling a little bit in the early seasons, these early sports in the fall, to compete at the AA level. We knew this was coming up. We talked about it a couple weeks ago before the season started, that this might be tricky for them, and it is a big step up. Sure, it's not like, wow, these are way bigger kids or anything else. It's just a different overall atmosphere, and you're going against schools that probably have almost twice the amount of kids they do in their school that you do as just a new AA. So they'll get their feet under them. They'll have a chance to probably kick the crud out of Bozeman and Gallatin Valley next year. But Belgrade's about a year or two away, I think, and we all kind of thought that. So hang in there, and hopefully they'll get a win coming up shortly here for the Panther soccer team. In football, Belgrade had last week off, so they came into this week's contest against Billings Senior at Senior High School. Kickoff is scheduled for 7 o'clock. Panthers are looking to get their first victory after losing in overtime 2 weeks ago to CMR. Billings Senior is coming off of their first victory of the year last week versus Great Falls High, 21-7. So that should be a very interesting game. Senior has some speed in the wide receiver spot with the two Bergen cousins leading the way. Junior Bergen just got a offer from Montana State. He has offers probably from, I think, from UM and a bunch of other schools. He might be looked at by the Mountain West as well a little bit. So he is a heck of a player. Belgrade's going to have their hands full, but if they can get that close with CMR, this is more of a passing team. CMR has always been a running team, so we'll see how Belgrade does in that one. Moving down to Manhattan High, in order to be considered an elite program, a team must be able to succeed against top competition. In a showdown between top five teams in Class B Friday night, Manhattan proved it's the number three ranked team as well is well deserved. The Tigers scored the first 26 points of the contest and forced three turnovers in a 26-14 victory over then number four ranked Missoula Loyola. Missoula Loyola fell to fifth, and Manhattan didn't move at all, which is ridiculous to me. Loyola is now 2-2 on the year. How can they still be ranked? Anyways, Manhattan improved to 3-0 for the fourth time in 5 years and earned its first ever victory at Rollin Field. The Tigers scored touchdowns on three of their first six possessions in the first half and outgained Missoula Loyola 162-53 yards prior to halftime. That includes marching 56 yards in 9 plays after receiving the opening kickoff. So Manhattan comes out hot. Great team down there with the Tigers. They walloped, I think it was Three Forks the week before that. Now they prove with Missoula Loyola that they're a team to beat. They now have a target on their back, though. I don't think any of the other teams that they're going to play going into the playoffs are going to be nearly as good as Missoula Loyola was, if they're any good. So they definitely can't have a letdown coming up or anything else. So congratulations to Manhattan football. One of the better football teams in the Valley right now. Moving on to volleyball, Manhattan's volleyball team has surged atop the conference standings. The Tigers posted their second consecutive District 5B win Saturday, knocking off previous unbeaten Townsend on the road. Sophomore Olivia Westervelt tallied 14 kills and a pair of blocks to lead them to a 27-25, 25-21, 29-25, 25-22 victory. Manhattan 4-3 and 4-1 on the year, which has won 4 of its past 5 matches, received several key contributions in the victory. This week, Manhattan returns to action Thursday, hosting Columbus in non-conference match before traveling to Big Timber for a league contest on October 4th. Moving on to Three Forks, the volleyball team, Manhattan returns to Three Forks began its day with a 13-25, 20-25 loss to Roundup in pool play, then fell to Colstrip 15-25, 11-25. The Wolves capped pool play with a 25-23, 21-25 split against Red Lodge. In bracket play, Three Forks beat Park City 25-19, 25-18 before losing to Red Lodge 13-25, 25-23, 13-15. That's a lot of numbers. In football, Caden Meyer tossed a pair of touchdown passes and Trey Johansson ran for 2 more to lead Columbus to a 32-0 Southern B victory against Three Forks Friday night. It was the 3rd consecutive loss to begin the season for the Wolves, who are still seeking their first points of the season. They haven't scored yet. Also shut out against Powell County 33-0 and Manhattan 47-0. This week, hopefully, the Wolves will look to get on the board with a conference game against Big Timber Friday night in Three Forks. So if you have a chance, go root on Three Forks Wolves. They need your support. They need you out there loud and proud to help the Wolves hopefully not only score points, but score enough for the victory. We'll take a quick break right now, come back with a look at MSU sports. Once again, you can reach us at kgvm.org, 95.9 FM on the radio dial, or 406-624-6534 on the phone. Once again, this is the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
You're listening to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Welcome back to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show here on KGVM. Once again, my name is Ian Laird. You can reach us at kgvm.org, 95.9 FM on your radio dial, or at IanLaird3 on the Twitters. Once again, the Gallatin Valley Sports Show is brought to you by Spectator Sports Bar and Grill. Countless TVs and specials to catch all the big games, including Bobcat games, all the college greats, and of course the Lions, which are the only NFL team anybody should watch. Located in 19 Tyne Lane up by the MSU campus, their phone number is 406-587-2156. That is Spectator Sports Bar and Grill, where the tailgating continues. Let's take a really quick look at MSU action from last week. We'll start with volleyball. Montana State senior Evie Wilson made the most of her last appearance at Dahlberg Arena, recording a match-high 13 kills to guide the Bobcats to a 25-21, 25-13, 25-18 win over the hated Montana Grizzlies on Tuesday night, securing the first of many points to come in the Cat-Grizz rivalry for the big trophy. Front of the 907 spectators, so not bad for a volleyball team. Wilson, a product of Vancouver, Washington, set a tone early. The rest of the Bobcats followed. Montana State, now 5-5 and 1-0 on the year, had 3 players with a 400 attack mark or better. I guess that's pretty good. Wilson finished hitting 429% from the field, while Kelsey Wing led all players with .667 attacks, marks on 8 kills. Hannah Scott posted a .38 from the floor to go with her 7 kills, and freshman Kira Thompson added 9 kills to round out MSU's efficient offensive performance. This week, Cats will travel to Greeley to take on 6-6 Northern Colorado Bears, so good luck to the girls. This coming up week in cross country, Montana State eliminated 2 first place runners, including claimed two first place runners, including a team's first place showing to highlight the MSU Cross Country Classic at the Bridger Creek Golf Course here in Bozeman. That was last Saturday. Montana men's squad topped Utah State by a 28-36 margin to take first in the team standings of the 5-mile race. There was rain and low temperatures and under heavy rain. Terrible weather for them to run. Bobcats came into the meet behind the Aggies in the, good luck with this one, USTFCCCA. I have no clue what that even means. Montana regional or mountain region rankings. Junior Colin Buck took first in the men's race by competing a time of 24 minutes, 50.2 seconds. It was Buck's opening meet of the 2019 season and was his first time taking first in a collegiate meet. So congratulations to him. Women's race was controlled from the get-go by Bozeman native Camila Noe. She placed the field and eventually came away with the first place finish at a time of 17 minutes 07.7 seconds. It was her first cross country showing for a Bobcat. Bobcats women finished third as the team standing. Utah State registered 30 points, followed by Montana's 57. Boo. And then third place was the Cats with 62. Camila was rewarded for her effort by being named the Big Sky Cross Country Athlete of the Week. So congratulations to Camila and the rest of the Bobcats cross-country team. This week, the Cats head west to go play the Grizz, or run against the Grizz, to compete in the Montana Invite at the UM Golf Course. Moving on to golf, Montana State's Kelly Hooper carded a final round even par to lead the Bobcat golf team to the final round in the Colonial Williamsburg Ptarmigan Ram Classic. Whew! On Tuesday, September 24th at the Ptarmigan Country Club, Hooper fired a 72 for her third round score and finished play with a 12 over par 228. She was 3 over following the first 6 holes of her final round, but responded by recording 4 birdies over the next 12 holes. She finished the tournament by tying for 30th in the individual standings. Delaney Elliott and Carol Schultz each shot a final round of 80 on Tuesday. Elliott's 238 over 54 holes placed her in a tie for 53rd place, while Schultz's 243 put her in a tie for 63rd. Rounding out MSU's final round lineup is Hoster and Rodriguez Todd. Hoster shot an 81 Tuesday to her 239, tied for 54th. Rodriguez Todd placed 62nd by shooting 242. Montana State finishing in 12th place with a team score of 944. New Mexico State won this tournament with a score of 890. Next week, Bobcats were scheduled to participate in the Rose City Collegiate on September 30th in Aurora, Oregon. Over their 3 tournament of this fall slate. So they play in the fall, then they take a winter break, and then they play again in the spring. So it's a long year for golfers, and we talked a lot about that in the PGA as well. It takes a lot of difficulty to get through all that. Moving on to football, 3 different Montana State runners surpassed 100 yards as the Bobcat gained a season-best 670 total yards on Saturday while beating visiting Norfolk State 56-21. The game marked the final non-conference game for 8th-ranked Bobcats, or now 7th, and their 3rd straight win after a season-opening loss to Texas Tech. Surprise starter Tucker Rovig sparked the Bobcats' offense, throwing for 221 yards and 4 touchdowns. It was Rovig's first start since starting a game in 2018. We'll talk about that in a little bit. The Bobcats are 3-1. This week, the Cats will stay at home to face vaunted offense in Northern Arizona and quarterback Case Cookus. So how will the Cats fare this week? We will find out quickly after this break. Once again, you can reach us at 406-624-6534, kgvm.org, or 95.9 FM on your radio dial. Once again, this is the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Go. He may be fat and bald, but he knows his sports. You're listening to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show on KGVM.
Let's go! Walks fairly down the street.
Welcome back to the Gallatin Valley Sports Show here on KGVM. My name is Ian Laird. You can reach us at 406-624-6534, KGVM.org or 95.9 FM on your radio dial. The Gallatin Valley Sports Show is brought to you by Spectator Sports Bar and Grill. Countless TVs and drinking specials catch all the big games. Located at 19 Ty Lane by the MSU campus. Phone number is 587-2156. That is Spectator's Sports Bar and Grill, where the tailgating continues. So, Cats with a big win this last week against Norfolk State as we get into the end of our coverage for the day. Take a look back at that game. Three Cats gained over 100 yards in the game, and like I said minutes ago, Tucker Rovig made his first start of the season. So let's take a quick look at the good, the bad, and the ugly for this game. We'll start, as always, with the good. The Cat defensive front four. They came to play in this game. Sturck and company put pressure on the Norfolk quarterback all game. Every one of the front four had a great intensity, and the backups came in, and you couldn't even tell there was a difference. I mean, there's a little bit. Anytime Sturck leaves, you're going to. But the starters and the backups all played amazing pressure on the quarterback the whole time. He never felt comfortable back in the pocket. He's kind of a scrambling quarterback, but even when he got outside, the players proved that they could chase him down. So a great effort by the front four. That is a major good. The second is Tucker Rovig. There have been a lot of comments on Bobcat Nation and by other people about his play last week, with some going as far as to say he played poorly. I have no clue what these people are watching or talking about, or if they even did watch the game, because he played great. In my mind, he did everything he needed to do and then some. He had some great touch on the ball, scrambled when he needed to, but found open guys and put the ball where the wide receivers could make a play. I guess you could say there wasn't a great team that he was going against, but you play who's on your schedule. And if that's who's on there and you dominate him like he did, it is what it is. And any day that you go 21 for 27 for 225 yards and four touchdowns with no turnovers, in my book, that's a great day. Is he missing some reads? Probably. It was his first start. Could he have hit some receivers that were wide open a little better? Probably, but it was his first start. I didn't see anything out there that made me go, ooh, this might be tough. And no offense to Bauman, but Rovig seemed like he commanded the game better. Again, it was against Norfolk State, so you never know. But anybody, you have to play the teams, and anybody that, like I said, passes for 225 yards and four touchdowns, in my mind, that's a good day. So I don't know what these people are looking at that are complaining about it. The running backs is also a good. Good God, the Cats are loaded at running back. And I guess thank God they are, because of the injury bug has hit that group the hardest of anybody. Jones went down at halftime with an injury, but not before. He gained 100 yards in the first half. Three players ran for over 100 yards. And that's without Anderson, without Ifanse, even playing. So you don't have two of your better running backs even in there, or runners in there. Anderson's a tight end, or a linebacker, sure. But if the Cats can even get half of that against NEU, I really think they will blow them out. If they can play like this next week, they are going to be a tough, tough team to beat this week and in the future. We'll move on to the bad. There's not a lot of them, but injuries. With Ifanse, Anderson, Filer, Tucker II didn't play in the game. So three total running backs and an all-conference defensive back were out for the game. If the Cats can get and stay, I guess, a little bit healthier and stay healthy, good luck to any Big Sky team that is out there. The injury bug has hit them pretty hard so far in the running back, but it doesn't look like it's slowing them down. But that is a bad. You don't like to see that many injuries, because eventually that is going to wear you down. The only other bad that I saw, and it wasn't a horrible bad, but it was still something that needs improvement, was the secondary. Now, I know that I've harped on this in the past, but it just doesn't seem like they're improving in the linebacker and defensive back play when it comes to pass coverage. Linebackers are doing great when it comes to run protect, sniffing out the screens on the side. They're playing awesome at that. But in pass coverage, when they have to fall back 5 or 10 yards, they are struggling with those intermediate passes, and our DBs got burned 2 or 3 times for 60-yard touchdowns, or it could have been 60-yard touchdowns, 60-yard passes, to wide-open guys. So that is definitely something the Cats are going to have to look at, especially when NEU comes in. Case Cookis is not going to throw the ball errantly. He's a very, very accurate passer, and that's something that is going to really eat up our safety help if the DBs and the linebackers can't step it up. I don't think there's anything wrong with our safeties. I think they're doing their job pretty well. It's just with Filer out, an all-conference DB, his backup has been playing decent but not great. Against Cookis, they are really, really going to be tested. The only ugly that I have is the weather. Pick a lane, weather. Can't be both sunny and then cold and rainy in the same 15-minute stand. I know it's Montana, and it's normal around here, but I'm a fat guy, and I can't handle that kind. I either wear a coat or I don't. And if you get hot, then I sweat. If you get cold, then that sweat turns cold, and then I'm freezing. So just make up your mind. For a fat kid, please, weather, help me out a little bit this week, which is supposed to be snowing and miserable as well. Moving on to this week's game, the Cats will face probably the best passing team and a passing attack they have seen all year, and that includes Texas Tech. Case Cookus is very accurate when he's not getting ejected for targeting like he did against the Grizzlies a couple years ago, especially on the deep ball. He's great at throwing the deep ball, very accurate, but he's more of an inside the tackles passer, so we'll get to that here in a second as well. So the Cats DBs will definitely have their hands full. The Lumberjacks enter Saturday's game at 2-2 after last weekend's 40-27 loss at number 10 ranked Illinois State. NAU is 2-0 at home this season and 0-2 on the road. Montana State comes in at 3-1, like we said, and ranked number 7 nationally now this week. Lumberjacks are led in rushing by Joe Logan, 37 carries for 79 yards, and George Robinson for 16 carries for 77. So you can see they don't run the ball a lot and for a lot of yards. Passing, of course, is their specialty. 90 of 154 and 4 interceptions. He's already got 1,400 yards passing and 12 touchdowns, does Case Cookus on this early year. Johnson is their leading receiver, 24 catches for 372 yards. But right behind him is Brandon Porter, 21 for 327 and 4, and Joe Logan out of the backfield, 12 catches for 225 yards and 5 touchdowns. Tackles. Jalen Cook has 23 to lead the team. Sacks, Brandon Worthy has 2.5, so not even close to anything that the Cats have. Cats have like four players that have 2.5, so good luck there, or more than 2.5. Interceptions, Brandon Worthy has one, and that pretty much sums it up for there. They've got about four players with one, so the most interceptions anybody has is one for the Lumberjacks. So what do the Cats have to do then to get their second home game win in a row? Well, number one, like we said, make Cookus move. If he is allowed to stand in the pocket with time, he will pick the Cats secondary apart. Make him uncomfortable. Make him have to run around, make him have to scramble out of the pocket and look downfield. Can he do that? Is he quick enough to, when he turns that corner? The last quarterback was, so he made it almost to the sidelines before getting tackled. Is Cookus going to be quick enough to step out of the pocket and avoid Sterk and some of these other ones? I don't know if he is or not, but that's going to be a huge issue coming up this week. The number two is find a pass defend. You've got to. Cats will have to play their best secondary game of the year if they don't want this thing to turn into a scoring fest and the last person to 50 wins the game. If they can do that, the Cats should be in very, very good shape. Number three, on offense for the Cats, they need to pound the ball. It's tempting to go air raid out there, as NAU secondary is also terrible this year, but the Cats need to stick to the date that brought them to the dance, and that is a heavy dose of screen passes and runs off tackle and up the middle. Don't be cute. Just play their game and forge forward and see how it goes. So I think the Cats have a chance in this one. My final prediction on this one is my heart says Rovig will prove he belongs and prove all his naysayers on Bobcat Nation and all over the interwebs and the Twitters wrong, that was just a fluke. He's going to come in and the Cats cruise late in the third and early in the fourth to a 31-17 victory. That's my heart. My head says it will be way closer than that, as NAU is known to be a burden, to say it the best, for the Cats. Every time they come here, a couple years ago when Estrada played for them, Cats were supposed to beat them pretty handily, and NAU ended up winning that contest. The NAU is a tough place to play down there. NAU always seems like they play to the level of their opponent. If they're playing a great opponent, they're going to play great. If they're playing an opponent that's like, meh, not that great, then they normally falter, and a lot of times they struggle with teams like that, and you always see that with NAU. They come out on top, and it's like, wow, NAU is playing pretty well. They almost beat Arizona State. They did this, they did that. And then they beat the Cats or they beat the Grizz. And it's like, wow, they're really somebody to contend with. And then they lose to the bottom three teams in the Big Sky by an average of 22 points a game or 18 points a game. And it's like, what happened there? How did that happen? So you never know which NAU team it's going to be. But normally, especially up here, they play pretty well. They don't have any kind of issues with air or anything else, because they're at 7,000 feet and we're at 4, so it's not going to be any kind of like, wow, this is really high, we can't catch our breath. They're going to be ready for that. They play here every other year, pretty much, except for the stupid Big Sky schedule nowadays. So my heart says it's going to be a lot closer, to about a 28-21 victory for the Cats, with a big sack from either Sterk, Scrampos, or Marks at the end of the game to wrap it up for the Cats, and that'll end that last drive. We kneel it out, and we win. So hopefully my heart is right, and we cruise to a victory. But I think it's going to be a lot closer than a lot of people think. Well, that's our show for the game. Once again, you can listen this Friday night to the Hawks game here on KGVM. Broadcast starts at 6:50 with kickoff scheduled for 7 o'clock in the new Van Winkle Stadium, Bozeman Hawk Football. As always, it's brought to you by the Ridge Athletic Club, Spectator Sports Bar and Grill, and the Liquor Spot. Good luck to all the local teams this week, and as always, go Cats!